On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about pollen because if you've noticed, and I know you have, it's everywhere. What is going on with all this yellow pollen that is covering everything outside right now? We're going to be talking about the Leafs and Game 5. By the time you listen, you may know the answers already, but we'll talk about it anyway. And the topic that I swore we would never talk about on this show, but this time we break down UFOs. The Washington Post is writing about them as if they're serious things. 60 Minutes is talking about them like they're real things. Is it time to talk about UFOs like they are real? Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
If you have a dark car or dark patio furniture or dark, anything that's outside lately, and it doesn't have to be dark, I guess, you probably will have still noticed. You will have seen the yellow dust that is over everything these days, it seems. And not just here in Hamilton, although heaven knows we've got tons of it here. A friend from Uxbridge today posted something on Facebook. It was a photo of her car. And it looked like someone had taken durum wheat grain or durum wheat flour and sprinkled it on the hood. It was thick, yellow, dusty mush because there had been a little bit of rain. Well, it's not just dust and it's not flour. It's pollen. But what in the world is going on? Because this seems excessive. Does it not? To anyone else, this seems excessive. I want to bring in Barbara McKeon. She's the head of education at the Royal Botanical Gardens who joins us now. Barbara, thank you for doing this today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, why don't you walk us through this? Everybody has noticed this. You can't not have noticed this. What is the yellow stuff that is coating everything in our city these days?
Little microscopic grains full of sperm cells.
Well, that makes me not want to touch anything ever again.
It's breeding season in the plant world.
Is it specifically from one or two types of plants, or is it everything that's spewing it out?
It's not everything. If you've got something like a pear tree or an apple tree with nice flowers on it, those are pollinated by bees. But for a lot of plants, they rely on the wind to move their sex cells around, and they're doing it in spades right now. So we've had a really dry spring, so it kind of exacerbates the problem where it's not getting washed away by rains and washed a little bit out of the trees by the rain as well. So
okay, so this is not just one or two types of trees. This is all the trees are doing this right now.
Not all of them. Certainly a lot of the evergreens, spruce, pine, fir trees, things that we often have in the foundation plantings around our house. And then right through from early spring, if people have allergies in late April, it might be red maple, for example, that they are allergic to. And, birch is a problem. Walnut is a problem right now. Oak's just coming along as well. So they're all, different types of trees that have very insignificant, tiny little flowers that, don't pop at us like something like an apple blossom does. And so we don't realize this is going on in the background, but they have these, you'll see kind of little dangly, furry bits. Even, for people that look at willow, the soft blooms of a willow, they'll pop out into a longer pollen extruding machine as the age. So yeah, it's all around us, and it'll stop fairly soon. The spring's a little bit earlier, and it's come along a lot more intensely. So I think that's part of the problem right now. We've had this really warm weather early on, then it got some stuff into bloom that we got cooler weather. That stuff sits on hold for a while, and then other plants catch up with them and they start blooming, and so you end up with this mass explosion of pollen from a lot of different plants that normally would be spread a little bit more thinly over the season.
And a lot of people have posted videos showing, they've touched a tree, they shake a tree, whatever, and it's an explosion of this pollen. Is it always that way? Like, is there more production for some reason this year, or is it just, as you say, that it's drier and earlier, and so it seems like it's more?
Well, there's some interesting thoughts about the impact of climate change on pollen production. So climate change overall, that extra carbon dioxide that we have in the atmosphere, actually can make plants grow. I mean, it's what they use, what they take in. They breathe out oxygen. We're the reverse of that. But the more carbon dioxide, it actually enhances plant growth. And there's some research showing that, we're going to have more problems with higher pollen levels. But we also have another thing going on in cities where we've had a selection over the last, maybe three decades of male trees. And trees can be male and female. Sometimes the flowers for both sexes are on one tree. But female trees often leave a mess. They drop a lot of seed later on in the season. Ginkgos, for example, if anybody has a female ginkgo, messy fruit, really smelly. So municipalities started using male trees in a lot of the planting programs that they have. And so we've got a lot more pollen-producing trees proportionately in most urban areas now than we would have, back in the 80s, say.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Barbara, I with all the stuff you're saying, and it all makes great sense, I live in an area of town that doesn't have a ton of trees, certainly not a ton of mature trees, and yet everything around us is completely coated, which I sort of find odd. I mean, it really suggests that you don't have to be right in the shade of one of these old mature trees to have this stuff all over the place.
No, it's meant to be dispersed on the wind. I mean, a lot of it, there's actually different species of trees have different weights of pollen, different size of and shape of pollen particles. But the grains of it, I mean, in some cases they may, spread, 100 meters away from the original tree. Other cases, a lot of it might fall within 10 meters and end up on the ground. And if you noticed, after the rains that we had yesterday, there's a lot of it on the sidewalk, floating in the puddles. It would have been washed out of the air at that point in time, washed off the leaves and other surfaces that it was on. But, it doesn't, most tree pollen doesn't go that far. You get into ragweed season, mind you, and, that is like 20,000 feet. They've found ragweed pollen up in the air. It can circulate completely all the way around the world, so... it's extremely buoyant, which is part of the summer problem that we have. Not goldenrod, mind you. Goldenrod is a fabulous plant for pollinators. It's insect pollinated, but ragweed is, they bloom at the same time. It gets a bad rap, but it really moves compared to most tree pollen.
Well, you just saying the word ragweed probably caused a bunch of people listening to have their sinuses completely clog up and they've had to run for a tissue because, it's just brutal. And I'm wondering, is all pollen allergenic?
Not everything, no. But, you look at some of them and, we're all familiar with what a coronavirus looks like and those spikes. You see some of them and they actually look more like a medieval mace, like the thing that had the little pokey bits all around it as a weapon that they swung on a chain. They've got that kind of a look. So they're meant to be able to cling on to things. I mean, they've a lot of, more insect-moved pollen is definitely built to stick to a bee. But, they're not meant to just roll off the surface. They're not round little grains. They've got some texture to them. And so physically and then, our lungs aren't really built to have anything go into them other than fresh air. And so it's an irritant physically. And for some people, their immune system is activated. They become sensitized to it. And
a lot of people, because we've heard from a lot of people, I'm sure you have too, that they've been saying this spring has just been disastrous for them. It's been horrible.
Yeah, well, and we were talking at work and people were saying, I don't get allergies and yet I'm waking up in the middle of the night all stuffed up. What's going on? So... yeah, sleeping with the windows open, you end up with it in your house. people will have noticed if doing housework over the last few days that there's a lot of extra stuff. And most of that stuff, if you looked at it under a microscope, is pollen.
But Barbara, what I'm finding really weird about all this, and look, once again, everybody listening has seen this yellow pollen everywhere. I mean, we know it's there. And then we see numbers from the Aerobiology Research Laboratory that says that our pollen count in Hamilton is actually down considerably from recent years. That So what am I missing? Is there, do they count things differently, or is it just because it's all popped out at once, or is it earlier? It just, it seems like that the two can't jibe, the amount we're seeing and the numbers they're presenting.
Yeah, there's definitely some, cycling of plants. You see that if you happen to have an oak in your front lawn, for example. Some years you'll have loads of acorns, other years hardly any. So, some species have that kind of a, up high years and low years, and there may be a bit of that, but I do think, we don't normally get the kind of extreme dryness that we've had through the month of May. It doesn't, that's not a norm. It's usually a good amount of rain through April and May. And, but it's so, been so extremely dry that the stuff that's on the ground is getting blown away, by the wind and pushed back up, and not to any height, but still being pushed around a bit. And you get the that impact, as I mentioned earlier, of just that all of the bloom of things. I mean, I've still got some daffodils in my garden. The tulips are just barely gone. The lilacs are fully out. We've got all of these flowers that wouldn't normally blooming at the same time are blooming concurrently. And the same kind of things going on with the tree flowers. We just don't notice that they're in bloom because the flowers don't need to be bright and showy to attract an insect. They just need to be able to dangle in the wind.
And we only have a few seconds, so as we leave, be the giver of hope to those who do have allergies. How much longer will they have to be waiting and until we think we can move past this?
Ooh, I can't give you exact. All I can say is it's been a very intense spring in terms of bloom, so things are pushed ahead, and hopefully that means that this will... the tree pollen season will pass, but unfortunately, there's grass season and ragweed season still to come.
I apologize
on behalf of the plants.
Barbara McKeon, the head of education for the Royal Botanical Garden, really appreciate the time. Thanks for helping us tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
I know my next guest is at his house right now. In his leaf attire, I guarantee it. Rick Zamperin from 900 CHML Radio. I do want to take something, just not leafs, just before we get in. We're going to spend most of the time on that. But a little bit of news, because a lot of people, Rick, have asked over the last number of months, and you are good friends with Bubba O'Neill from CHCH, and I am as well. Great news, after 6 weeks of him being in hospital and then recovering from COVID, Bubba is back on CHCH today. So I wanted to give that update. And I know that's, I know you've been thinking about it. I know you're close with him, and it's good news. Finally.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? The first thing I did when I popped into the house was turn on CHCH, and I'm actually watching it now. They're doing business right now. I mean, this should be 1 hour of Bubba O'Neill's remarkable recovery from what has been just a grueling ordeal. And you chronicled it nicely in a few articles that you wrote about him and what he's gone through. And I just can't imagine, the pain, and, more specifically, the unknown of, what's happening, what's going to happen, how is this going to impact me and my life? And it's great to see him back at work and upright, and hope to see him soon.
Yeah, they should have done a full hour with Morgan Freeman narrating the story. Or Richard Attenborough. Either one would have been fine.
Either one would have been great.
Let's get back to the Leafs for a second. They are going tonight. They have a chance tonight to win their first playoff. This is stunning. To win their first playoff series in 17 years. Rick, there are kids who are graduating from high school this year who have never been alive, forget a Stanley Cup, to see the Leafs win a single playoff series.
Yeah, my son's in that group. He's 16. He's going to be 17 in November, and he was born in 04, but many months after the Maple Leafs ousted the Ottawa Senators in, I think it was April 20th, 2004. And man, it seems like a lifetime ago that this team has been able to win a first-round series, whether it was against the Bruins or the Washington Capitals a few seasons ago, or even being eliminated in the play-in round. It wasn't necessarily a playoff round against Columbus last year. It's been a long, long time. Whether it's going to happen tonight or on Saturday or early next week, who knows? But they're up 3-1, and I'm sure they are ultra confident going into Game 5 tonight.
Well, ultra confident, but I got to tell you, and maybe it's just pessimism born of 17 years of failure mixed with 50 years or 40 years before that. But I mean, I've heard from a number of Leaf fans today already. You're up 3-1. saying, yeah, but if they lose tonight, they go back to Montreal and there will be fans in the building, and that's going to give the Canadiens a big boost. And then it's game seven and then Carey Price. And, you know, there's Leaf fans, Rick, and maybe justifiably so, who are still looking at this going, you know, I'm not celebrating anything yet.
I'm raising my hand right now. I'm in that boat because how you laid it out could easily occur. You know, Montreal with their backs against the wall tonight, and I'm using the cliche, but they're obviously going to give it 110% because it's do or die and there's no more tomorrows. They're going to play their best effort tonight. They just have to, and I would be shocked if they didn't. So they're going to give the Leafs a run for their money tonight, and if they do win, yeah, it's back at the Bell Center where there's going to be 2,500 screaming rabid Habs fans cheering them on Saturday. And if they win that, because they're at home and they're, you know, motivated and they're on, or you know, that momentum's carrying them through, and that game seven occurs, my oh my, the doubt, the seed of doubt that would be planted in the minds of the Maple Leafs, forget about their fans, the players, would be enormous. So this is a big game. We'll see tonight if this current version of the Leafs has that killer instinct, because in prior seasons, in prior years, they haven't been able to, you know, put their foot down and go to the next round with ease.
Well, no, and you know, they should, and I'll tell you why, because during this, now the first game, I don't even count the first game. I mean, I know it counts, but it was such a weird psychological game with Tavares getting hurt, and it looked like the Leafs, most of the team just didn't even want to be there for most of the game because of that. But the rest of the series, I mean, Montreal, and look, the Canadiens fans are going to think I'm insulting them on purpose. I'm not. They've looked awful. And I don't know if it's the Leafs that have been that good or Montreal's that bad, but the Canadiens have looked awful.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, there's some talent on this Montreal team, but for whatever reason, they just can't find the net. And yeah, you got to give a thumbs up to Jack Campbell and the Leafs, you know, newfound defensive system. They haven't always had that. But the Leafs are playing well, too, especially in transition when there's a turnover. They're quickly the other way. They're playing responsible and structured in their own zone. Campbell, as I mentioned, has been great. Special teams has been huge. You know, Montreal's power play, I think, is 0 for 13 or 0 for 14. The Leafs, yeah, they only have a couple of power play goals, and Montreal has a shorthanded goal, the winner in game one. But still, this team, this Leafs team, has been rather dominant in large stretches or long stretches during each game. And, you know, you got to think that could continue tonight if they have that mindset.
Well, truly, I mean, you look at the Canadiens right now, and again, not to be digging a knife into someone, because I know there's Canadiens fans out there who are listening, but honestly, watching this series, who on the Montreal roster would be playing on the Toronto roster if you got to pluck? If you were the Leafs and you could pluck anybody out of Montreal, how many guys are you putting on your team right now? I can't think there's very many.
Yeah, there would be a few. You know, Price,
there'd
obviously
be a few
would be there. You know, Cole Caulfield, I'll take him. you know, I'm a big fan of Brendan Gallagher, Josh Anderson, and Tyler Toffoli. And then it's, you know, Shea Weber is a fantastic player, and I'd probably take him in a heartbeat. But, you know, he's injured, and I wouldn't take him injured, obviously. You know, Jeff Petrie, I'd probably take him. And then that's probably where the line kind of ends. But, you know, there's a handful of guys, six, seven guys on the Habs team that I think Toronto fans would like on their team.
I'm talking about, and fair comment, what you just said, but I'm talking about based on the way they're playing in these playoffs right now. Oh, and if that's okay. The case, I don't think Toffoli makes it. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think Weber even, I mean, you're right. Shea Weber should be a difference maker, but he has looked beyond ordinary in these playoffs. And even Brendan Gallagher, I mean, they talk about Brendan Gallagher being the guy that drives the Canadiens. I'm not trying to be ridiculous here. He's not on the top two lines probably of the Leafs right now, the way it's going, if he was to be moved over. I mean, this is why I think you're seeing a team that is being manhandled. That can change, but you just don't have many guys that you would look and say, absolutely, he would bump someone down. And if you've got that many guys that couldn't fit in, you're going to have a series where one team, even though the scores because of Carey Price are staying reasonable, where one team is way better.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're talking right now, no slight on Jack Campbell because he's been phenomenal, but Carey Price would be the only guy I would take.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Maybe. And maybe you put Caulfield in there somewhere, but yeah, you know what? It's rough for the Canadiens right now. And if you're a Canadiens fan, you're praying that something can change.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
It's 3-1, and it's been a dominant performance so far by the Leafs. And game five tonight at 7, as I say, Leafs' first chance to win their first playoff series in 17 years. Tell you one other thing about this that I have found a little bit disappointing. people have waited since 1979 for a Leafs-Canadian series, and it has been talked about in almost reverential tones about the day that we will finally get a Leafs-Canadian series. It kind of seems like this has been a bit of a dull series. I mean, maybe I'm missing it, but it just doesn't look like it's had the competitive fire and fury and everything else that I had expected it would.
I wholeheartedly agree. And if fans were in 1979 thinking, hey, this is going to be an exciting series, that wasn't either. It was a 4-0, demolition by the Habs over the Leafs in 79. But, you look at the other series, take even the sweep between Winnipeg and Edmonton. Edmonton loses 4 straight, but, three of those games are in overtime, including one in triple overtime. There haven't been a lot of lead changes or, exciting overtime periods at all in this Leafs-Habs series. They played 4 games. The first game was 2-1, and they had, 5-1, and the last two, squarely in favor of the Maple Leafs. There haven't really been that kind of back-and-forth hockey that we've seen in a lot of the other series, whether it's Islanders-Penguins or even Boston-Washington or, of course, the Jets and Oilers.
And a number of people are saying, look, this is just indicative that the Canadian division is the powder puff division, and as soon as whatever team emerges from this is just going to get destroyed by whoever they match up with. I'm not sure I'm buying that, although the Oilers absolutely were disappointing. The Canadians are a team that they scored goals this season. It's not like they couldn't score. The Leafs have shut them down. It's not like I don't think the Leafs and I don't think the Jets are beating and have beaten teams that are terrible. It just kind of looks that way right now.
Yeah, I think the one interesting scenario that's going to present itself is whether it's the Leafs or the Habs, if they do storm back to win the series, or Winnipeg, whichever of those teams comes out of the North, the interesting part about it is that they've played in this Canadian bubble with no fans. And we know that the American teams, and we saw a great example last night in Nassau, where the Islanders beat the Penguins to win that series in 6, and that crowd, which was packed, was absolutely raucous. None of the Canadian teams have had to play in front of that for well over a year. It was February of 2020 in which the last time they played in front of a live crowd. So the first game certainly, I think, will be getting used to in terms of those players playing in front of fans, but at the end of the day, every series is different. So whether it's Winnipeg against Boston or Toronto against Colorado in the Final Four semifinal series for the Cup, I think that game one is going to be very different for the Canadian players. But at the end of the day, each series is going to take on a life of its own.
One thing that I was shocked by today, maybe you were, I think a lot of people who have heard this might have been shocked, or if they haven't, they will be. John Tavares was skating today at Leaf practice, not in practice. He had his own ice time, but nonetheless, he was on skates in uniform skating. Were you as blown away by that as I was?
I was blown away by two things. Yeah, number one, definitely yes, because not only have the Maple Leafs said he suffered a concussion, but he also suffered a knee injury that's going to keep him out for at least 2 weeks. Now, there is some, rumor and innuendo and speculation that the Leafs have apparently made up, and I'm not confirming this or even denying it or even saying that it's relatively true, but I heard that there is speculation that the Leafs made up this knee injury to get the media to focus on that as opposed to the concussion symptoms. Whether it's true or not, again, I have no idea. But I find it extremely interesting that John Tavares, who we all saw that, really devastating injury to his head in game one, is back on the ice. And not only that, but a coworker of mine who has suffered for many years now with migraines says, number one, if you have a concussion and you have migraine headaches and you have those symptoms, there's no way you can put on a helmet. And he did that in the skate today. He also, in two videos post-game with the Maple Leafs congratulating on their victory and, really rallying up the troops, he was wearing a hat. And again, this individual who suffered from migraine saying, if you had a concussion, there's no way you're going to put on a hat because that pressure on the head, you just don't want that. So I find it interesting that in two videos he's worn a hat, and in the skate today he was wearing a helmet. When you're at the arena, it's not dark there. There's bright lights. There's pucks flying around. There's noises. So I think it's a really good sign for Tavares and the Maple Leafs that occurred today.
Yeah, and if the Leafs win this series, and they're up, but who knows? I mean, again, if you've been a Leaf fan, who knows? You've been down this dark, desperate road before. But if they do win, you know, you get to the next round, you buy a few more days, and who knows? I mean, the weirdest thing about these concussion things is that some guys get barely touched and they're out for months, and other guys get like this, and it looked like he was in like really catastrophic injury territory, and he's back up skating in a few. Who knows? The brain is a weird and wonderful thing, and each person's responds differently. Wouldn't that be the story, though? We got to run, but wouldn't that be the story if you get it? And you know, Rick, you know, the way sports works every time, if John Tavares could somehow get back into the Leafs lineup, he is either going to do something majestic that makes him a legend forever, scoring a winning goal, or he's going to be the guy who gives up something horrible. He will not be an invisible, just neutral guy. Something will happen that will make him the storyline.
Well, we saw with Steven Stamkos last year in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Right,
back
right.
After missing so much, yeah, and he scores on his first shift, and it's such an amazing moment. And I think, if anything, this Tavares injury, as devastating as it was, kind of galvanized this Maple Leafs team, and maybe just be a precursor to bigger things to come.
We shall see. Rick Zamperin, game starts at 7 o'clock. You can keep the radio on and have it in the background. See, people can do that. It's amazing what technology offers these days. Rick, appreciate it. We'll let you go and enjoy the game. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
You got it. Thanks, Scott.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
So a number of years ago when I started doing this show, I instituted one hard and fast, unbendable, non-pliable, non-negotiable rule. No UFOs, just a personal thing. I kind of always found the topic ludicrous. So I said, we are not talking UFOs on the show. Well, today I break my own rule. Now, it is with a good reason. It's not just to be talking about ET or something like that. It goes like this. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, 60 Minutes did a segment on UFOs. Like a real, a credible, a legitimate segment on UFOs. Now, they call them UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, which I guess sounds less hillbilly being abducted and probed by little green men kind of thing. You know, more credible, more educated or something. Anyway, this week then, the Washington Post jumped on board and had a serious piece about UFOs, or UAPs, if you prefer. Serious news outlets now discussing this, asking if UFOs are or could be actually real. All right. Well, if UFOs are now legitimate fodder for intelligent academic conversation, I can break my rule for one night and bring in Dr. Jesse Rogerson. We love having him here. He's an astronomy and physics professor at York University. He joins us now. Jesse, thanks for doing this today.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me back.
So let's dive right into this. You are an astronomy professor, not an astrology professor. You're not into little green men and News of the World front pages or X-Files episodes. So what do you make of academics and academia and intelligent people really legitimately, honestly studying the possibility of UFOs?
Well, it's interesting here because there's actually... When they say UFO or UAP, when scientists talk about it, they literally mean what the words say. No one's questioning that people have seen things, right? There's a UFO. It's an unidentified thing in the sky. It is a large jump then after that to attribute the phenomenon to an alien species. But I want to point out, like, the actual idea of looking for intelligent life in the universe, that's actually been around the scientific world for a very long time. And scientists are often painted as a group of people who are refusing to ask those questions, when in reality, astronomers and astrophysicists have been curious about this, just as everybody else has been curious about this for decades, for as far back as you can look. And we have dedicated millions of dollars and tons of telescope time looking for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence. So
yeah, and there was a movie once, and I think Jodie Foster may have been in it. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, Contact,
where they have the big to listen for any sort of signs coming in from. And I think that obviously the movie was fiction, but I think that those microphones or parabolic, those kind of things exist to be available to listen in case of something. So you're right. There's clearly people who have been studying this legitimately for a long time.
Absolutely. That movie was based on a book written by Carl Sagan, and it's a great movie. It's a great book. And the group that Carl Sagan wrote about is a group called SETI. It's an institute called the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and they've dedicated an academic careers to searching for signs of intelligent life in the universe. So scientists are curious. They're interested. They've even put their money where their mouths are and have attempted to measure these things in the universe. So far, those searches have come up with zero. But when it comes to, if you bring it back to the news that was going on in like the Washington Post and the stuff coming out of the Pentagon, like it is interesting, right? Like a scientist like myself will see that and say, oh, that's interesting. We have these fuzzy things in these images and these videos. It's worth looking into, absolutely. But the big but there would be, I'm not at all expecting the answer to those questions to be that it's because of alien life zipping around our planet.
Right.
There's probably an explainable reason for it.
Isn't there a belief, a tenet that we have that says, look, if you don't understand something, there's a bunch of explanations, probably the simplest one is the one that's most likely to be the real one. And if that's the case, the idea that maybe there's another country that has developed technology that we don't know about yet seems to make a whole lot more sense to me anyway than the idea that there somehow is a UFO from some other planet from a far off galaxy that's come to visit us.
Yeah, it's not that is an impossible thing. It's just that there's far more plausible scenarios. Just as you said, for example, spy technology is something that's held in great secret by many countries around the world. That's a possibility. It could also be tricks of the cameras or tricks of the equipment they're using to do the sensing, like take the images in the radar and such. And that has actually, there's a lot of work that's been done in this area. Like scientists sit down and they do real investigations into these UFOs, and they often come up with answers such as internal refraction of the cameras or, you know, I could go, there's a long list of things that it could be. And there are some that are still completely unexplained. But the danger you're in is to then say, okay, we can't explain it. And if you don't have an explanation for it, you have to stop there. If you want to put forward the hypothesis that what you're seeing in your camera or on your video camera or whatever, if you want to put forward the hypothesis that it is extraterrestrial intelligence that can do that, you then need to come up with a way of testing that. And if you can't come up with a way of testing it, then you can't answer that question, and therefore it's not science.
And the thing about this that leads to our discussion today is, again, the 60 Minutes episode, and people can look it up. It's online. They can find it. Just look up 60 Minutes UFO or UAP. And the Washington Post, I mean, both of them are, they're not saying that these are extraterrestrial life, but they're certainly in these segments leaving that open as a very real possibility, which I think is a huge step from where we would have accepted or thought would have been logical or reasonable in the past, that we would have laughed at these people before. If 60 Minutes 50 years ago had done a segment on UFOs, we would have said, you people have lost your minds.
Yeah, it's, I guess maybe it was big news when the Pentagon sort of declassified all this stuff over the last 5 or 10 years. And you have some, like the pilots that they have interviewing, like these are smart people and they know what they saw. It's certainly interesting stuff, and it's speculation is not a bad thing to do in science, but it's what's bad to do in science is to mask speculation as fact or mask speculation as solid theory. Speculation, scientists speculate all the time, right? And the idea that that something that you see in the sky could be a UFO, that's speculation. And it's not grounded in much foundation but you can take that speculation, you can form it into a question, and then you can go test it. And if and that's sort of how the scientists look at this. And I think that that's a really healthy thing to do. So when you look at when I look at them, I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. You know, there's these things flying around that we can't explain how that's working. That means we have an open question. Let's go try and answer those questions. So seeing 60 Minutes talk about it, I don't think it's crazy. It's definitely interesting and maybe a sign of our openness to ask some interesting questions.
All right. Your expertise is in astronomy and also in physics. Let's talk physics for a couple of minutes here, because one of the things, if you were going to leave open the possibility that this is something that is not from around here, if you sort of catch my drift, if this is something that we, you know, maybe from another place, like they are sort of suggesting could be based on the descriptions. I mean, some of the reports talk of lights in the sky behaving in ways that no plane or helicopter or anything else that we've ever seen could possibly work like or move like. Wouldn't our atmosphere and our gravitational pull from Earth and other things that make Earth, Earth, prevent stuff like this from happening? Like it has to be, you can't go into a fourth dimension in Earth. You can't have something that can't work. It has to make logical sense within the confines of our atmosphere.
So you're saying like the incredible G forces that something would be able to pull or something like that, or
right.
the sound barrier or something like that. Certainly, like you would need to, in order to say that what we see is legitimately an extraterrestrial intelligence, you'd have to come up with explanations for that. But just to keep in mind, I think all scientists you talk to here would be like, yeah, like the possibility is open, but it's a very, 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 very tiny possibility. There are likely explanations for what is seen in this photography and this video that would explain what's happening without the need to invoke extraterrestrial intelligence. And so you don't need to come up with models for stuff like that until it becomes a hypothesis you need to test, really.
Because how could you test?
Well, yes. Yeah, so that's a great question. And in science, if you have a question that can't be tested, then it's not science anymore, right? So there are ways, I imagine. I'm not an expert on extraterrestrial intelligence, but I would imagine there's ways.
And who is really?
There's some cool people out there. The SETI people would be good, interesting to talk to about this. That's where you sort of lose it in science, is if you can't test it, then you can't answer the questions. We can speculate all we want, but being able to solidify an answer on this is going to be a difficult thing.
There are people who no doubt believe wholeheartedly, and nothing you say can or will. I mean, they know that at Area 51 that there was an alien autopsy
yes.
and all this stuff, and nothing will change their mind, and it's all been hidden, and it's all a government conspiracy, and Smoking Man runs things, and the Four Horsemen from X-Files are behind the world and all the rest. But it becomes this thing as I look at these stories. And again, I'm aware that you and I are talking about the possibility of extraterrestrials visiting Earth, which is just, to me, it's kind of goofy, but anyway.
It's a little wild. Yeah. But the great thing about it though, is that it is interesting. And this, we're sort of getting into a region of science now where our technology has advanced so far that we can start investigating other planets around other stars in a really detailed way. For instance, the James Webb Space Telescope, which Canada is a part of, it's going to launch up into space sometime in the next year. It's going to be capable of studying atmospheres of other planets around other stars. And that's going to start opening up these investigations about life on other planets. So we're near there, and scientists want to answer these questions. The likelihood that life has visited, that life from out beyond our solar system has visited here and is currently actively investigating us, that's a really small chance, probably not true what's happening. But many scientists in my field are very interested in looking for life in the universe and are excited to find it. It's cool to see the excitement, even like on programs like 60 Minutes or from people who, if a person, like you said, absolutely believes it and no one can tell them otherwise, it's still like I feel that excitement the same way. Like I'm excited about it the same way. We're just going at it from different angles, I guess.
All right, last thing, because we got to run, and that is this. Jesse, let's say one of your students comes to the comes to class one day, assuming COVID is not here, and says, Dr. Rogerson, you won't believe this, but I saw a UFO last night. Or if they want to be really, you know, academic and credible, I saw a UAP last night. And they were convinced that it was not human and it was not from this realm. What would you say to them?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. And I, you know what I would do? And I've even done this before, and I've had questions like that. So we're sort of similar. And I'll say, I do the questioning of them. So I'd be like, okay, so you saw this thing in the sky. Can you think of any other possibility to explain the thing in the sky that you saw? And I'll let that question linger with them. You know, are you 100%, like, was it just you who saw it? Was there multiple other people who saw it? And all of these things, like, basically what I'm doing is I'm explaining the scientific method in a variety of ways, right? You know, multiple observers, that's a requirement of science. Multiple sets of data, that's a requirement of science. Ruling out all possible explanations, that's a requirement of science. And so it's a perfect learning opportunity for how the scientific method works. I almost don't even care to change their mind. What I want them to get out of it is how the scientific method works.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing to me because, again, if people go and watch the 60 Minutes piece on this, there were two very educated, very excellent U.S. Mm-hmm. fighter pilots, four actually, who say they saw this thing. And, you know, it gives it some credibility that it was not human. It couldn't have been from this planet, the way it moved and everything else. And then I think to myself, yeah, but for how many years did we see that picture of the Loch Ness Monster? And we knew, you know, back as a people that the Loch Ness Monster was real. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's how they did it. Okay. Well, fascinating stories though.
Not to discount those professionals, like those pilots, those people are like, they're pros at what they do and they know what they're seeing. But that doesn't mean that they're an expert in extraterrestrial technology, right? So they're making the leap, but their observations are very important, and we want to hear about their observations and apply the scientific method to them.
If you truly do, if anyone out there truly does believe that the extraterrestrial life forms are about to visit Earth, I would suggest you invest heavily right now in stocks in Reese's Pieces, because I understand from Hollywood that will be the future. Dr. Jesse Rogerson, always love having you on. Thanks for taking a few minutes today for this one.
No worries. This is such a fun conversation. Anytime.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.